Hello.
Hey, it's Margaret from Madison.
Hi, Margaret. Scott Carly here in Seattle.
Hi, Scott. Is it just us so far?
Yeah, as far as I know.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Pretty damp weekend, but I guess I got through it.
It's been kind of chilly out there, hasn't it?
Yeah, and wet. We seem to have been getting our winter weather more in May and June.
Hi, this is Tamara.
Hi, Tamara.
I got Margaret on.
Doug is
Hi,
here.
Margaret. Hi, Doug.
Hi.
Just the three of you so far?
So
yep.
Far.
Yeah.
Okay. So how have things been going with everybody?
I had a nice weekend.
Well, that's good. You know, actually, I can tell you, Margaret knows about the there's a group in the ESA Federation, the Air Quality Cluster, which does a lot of work in terms of matching air quality information with wildfires and things, and I can attest to the impact of wildfires in Canada on Boston yesterday.
Wow.
Air was, you could see it in the air, and yesterday evening we were in the unhealthy category, and it was stinging my eyes, and you could feel it when you breathed. I was really, it was impressive.
Yeah.
And I was able, on Air Now, I was able to find a little movie that showed the air quality index as it evolved over the course of the day yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know how long that's going to last? Like the weather pattern, when's it going to shift for you?
No, actually, we had major thunderstorms last night, and the forecast was that we would have moderate conditions today. And it's much, much nicer out today. I mean, in terms of yesterday, the sky really looked brown. I mean, it wasn't like it was overcast. It was really stuff, a lot of stuff in the air.
Did you have particular
thoughts then? Say that again?
I just wondered whether
it's
you
summer.
Had... because that's what I'm sure it was.
Scott, say that again, because Chris's voice blocked
out. Yeah, I had particulate counts.
I wasn't able to see that. I guess you can convert it, but the air quality index was 166, and supposedly over 150 is unhealthy.
Yeah.
And that's unhealthy in the sense that even people who are healthy should feel the impacts,
yes.
As opposed to the next category down is only people who are sensitive, you know, people with asthma and stuff would feel
right.
It. So,
wow.
I mean, we went out and had a picnic for lunch, and we were sitting on top of this, I hesitate to call it a mountain, but it was a peak, it was a hill, where you usually could see downtown Boston, and we could hardly see anything.
Wow.
I was even trying to figure out which direction we were facing, north, south. Well, I knew we weren't facing north, but east or south was because we just couldn't see any landmarks at all.
Unbelievable. Ugh.
So, anyway, but supposedly the wildfires were in Quebec.
Yeah.
Anyway, who else has called on? I know I heard Chris come in.
Elaine Andrews is on.
Hi, Elaine.
Hi.
Karen Holweg.
Karen, hi.
Hi. Joel Rosenberg.
Hi, Joel. Well, I was just telling people about the major air quality event that we had here in the Boston area yesterday, as a result of wildfires in Canada.
Wow.
So, it was pretty impressive.
I was
very uncomfortable. Okay, so are there any announcements of things that are going on that people would like to share?
Well, we're working on another climate change grant proposal, of which there seems to be no end. This is Elaine from University of Wisconsin.
Elaine.
We're working on a USDA proposal that's in the food systems part of USDA. It's where extension is housed right now. So extension funds.
I see.
Of which the a little hard to work on because the focus is for this year is cropping systems focused on cereals, southern pines, and something else which I forget. But in any case, the money's there, so you try to figure out if there's something that we can do that's related to the focus. We're not going to try southern pines.
I also have a question for anybody who knows about that. We had submitted those abstracts to NAAAE, and do you know what the timing is of when we might be hearing?
Yes. We're supposed to be hearing in June, and I doubt it'll be today, although it sometimes is. So sometime within the next few weeks, we should hear.
Okay. I was just wondering, just so we can get things on calendars and know that they're actually going to stay there.
Right.
Other announcement, that was Karen, right?
Right.
Okay.
Well, I have a forward-looking one. We in New Mexico, where I've been doing a lot of partner network about both environmental ed and climate literacy opportunities, there's a statewide school law conference this week. We've been given a booth, an exhibit donated by a law firm, to introduce these programs to the school boards and school districts. So as that region would come along for a clean network and or, you know, other kinds of collaborative opportunities, I've been doing 10 months of seeding New Mexico for a campaign on both environmental and climate literacy.
So when you say statewide school law, can you explain what you mean by that?
Well,
whether it's laws about schools or I'm not sure what you mean.
It's laws about running school systems. But this New Mexico was one of the states that signed the Education for Sustainability Week proclamation. The governor of New Mexico did our proclamation last year. So it's just, it's an opportunity to introduce to administrators and boards what is education for a sustainable future, and climate literacy is one of the planks of that platform.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
That we introduce to them. So it's just, it's an introductory, you know, opportunity for our issue to school administrators.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it is a systemic policy level way to intervene, right?
That's where we hope to be. You know,
that's
the grail.
Yeah.
That could be exciting.
Yeah. So that's this week. I'll be leaving the eastern seaboard for New Mexico on Thursday, and we have 2 days there.
I see.
We're 700 people that will be our captive audience.
And you'll be a booth or a presentation or both?
Yeah, a booth and an invited. The law firm that's donated our booth has put on an invited reception for us. That will be, so they'll be inviting school board members that are, you know, they're going to target particular people to an invite.
And how did this law firm get involved, and what's in it for them to donate your booth? Are they just committed to the effort, or is there something else in it? I mean, I'm just curious how that happens.
Yeah, no, this is, well, like, who knows who. So there's somebody from my hometown in New Jersey that lives and works in the law firm in New Mexico that for the past year that they've been in, you know, aware of what I've been up to.
Mm-hmm.
As a educator and advocate, they brought it into their law firm, and the law firm became a sponsor and a partner in doing this.
Wow.
Nice.
Great. Interesting.
Very good.
Leadership stance as a, you know, for certain enlightened managers to get behind these campaigns.
Mm-hmm. What other extended activities do you have, Doug? You're always connected to a whole lot of different things.
Well, yeah. Now, the settings that we have in the East, we're developing educational, vocational pathways centers, and one is in New Jersey in Woodbridge, one is in New York in the Bronx, and so we have a 10,000 square foot building to make a green future center and to have education for the neighborhood and then career pathways for people in the Bronx. So that's a new front of like basically having a site to develop as a center of excellence, a regional and national center of excellence. And so among
Do these
other,
exist yet, or are they are in the planning stages?
The site exists, and the agreement to build it exists, but they, it hasn't launched yet.
Okay.
We're doing program development right now.
I see.
The education, I'm directing the education design, and so in addition to the youth leadership campaign and the sustainability literacy projects that I've been servicing around the country, climate literacy will be, again, a plank in that platform. So it's getting a foothold in the Bronx.
So Bronx and New Jersey?
New Jersey Woodbridge is a municipality that's designated as one of the sustainable communities of New Jersey. There's a sustainable Jersey designation that municipalities can apply for when they engage in certain activities. Woodbridge is the highest rated municipality in New Jersey, and we have a center there called the Museum of the Future. That's a green learning center that's just is launching June 12th. So I have an exhibit space there and an educational platform there through the founders of the Museum of the Future. So these are the evolution about this in terms of these multiple years is actually getting physical sites and settings to localize these programs.
And what's the coordinating organization behind this?
Well, the town of Woodbridge is a partner with an organization that is called the Center for Leadership and Sustainability. And they are behind the museum as a learning center.
Okay.
We're planning to make an alliance between these centers. Mm-hmm. So they'll have shared curriculum and an exhibit display.
Are they separate? Are they totally separate at the moment?
They are. Well, they're separate except that some of the people overlap them. They're they're separate in their origin.
Oh, I see.
Some of the personnel overlap.
Mm-hmm. Great. Are there any other comments or other topics that people would like to discuss?
Cameron, this is Susan. I've got one.
Okay.
It's a Susan Bird series, and I think some of you saw around May 26th, May 27th, the article that came out in the Denver Post and got circulated about a challenge in Mesa County, which is Grand Junction, Colorado, where there was a petition to the school board to teach global warming in what was called a balanced manner. And so this got picked up, and I heard about it all over the place. And I followed up with that. And in the article, there were two scientists who were named. So I got in contact with them and found out more about what was actually happening. And they were on a they were doing a radio interview on Saturday. So I sent them a bunch of information about the idea of, you know, so-called balanced education and resources from the National Center for Science Ed and resources from our work. And for that particular case, it looks pretty promising. They have a pretty good faith in the school board members, and the school board did not react to this petition except to say that they needed to look at what was in the standards. And in Colorado, we're fortunate that climate change and human-caused climate change is in the standards. But the organization behind this, which is called Balanced Education for Everyone, I would urge you to take a look at their site and keep aware of their activities. There is a petition circulating in Las Vegas, and the Clark County School District there is the fifth largest school district in the U.S., and there's parents who are part of this balanced education initiative from all over the country. So with this and, you know, the Utah legislation passed a resolution saying that climate change was a conspiracy, and, of course, there's the South Dakota thing. I think it behooves us all to be aware of this organization and what's happening in our areas because they're looking.
So the organization is Balanced Education for Everyone?
Right, and they have a website. It's balanced-ed.org. And they've got resources there, letters to send to parents. It's not just about global warming. They're also anti-Earth Day and anti-environmental education, it appears. So I think it...
These two scientists that you contacted were named, were they part of this effort or were they trying to counter it?
They were trying to counter it. Mm. So what happened was this was a public petition, so people knew it was coming down the pike. And somebody wrote about it on a blog, which they became aware of, so they showed up at the board meeting to provide the scientific perspective. And one's a professor at Mesa State College, and the other one is an ecologist who's been part of the Oil and Gas Drilling Commission or something as an environmental voice. So they're very active there, but we know here from Leslie Smith School Board work in Boulder and from Steve Newton at the National Center for Science Education that it's local people that matter. So having the local contacts and providing resources to them is what helps. They don't want to hear from people in Boulder in Grand Junction. So It's important that there be local mobilization. And this was called the first national test case for a school board. So I think it bears
So you watch. Provided the information to these two scientists who were already...
Right.
Was this information that they didn't already have?
Yes, because they're not educators.
Oh, I see.
They know about the climate science. They're in good shape for talking about the merits of the scientific consensus and the IPCC and, you know, the things that we know. But they're not well prepared to talk about why balanced education and the way it's being promoted is not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know about the standards, and so they need help from educators about the school context. And another one of the points was, you know, some of the other points were that kids were too scared about this. And so why are we scaring our children unnecessarily about something that's not even true? And the other was that children with conservative viewpoints felt uncomfortable in class. So there's a lot going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Susan?
Yeah?
Susan, this is Chris Comer. You know, I belong to a group here in Texas that fights anti-science, and we took a look at the websites of the BEE and the sponsoring organizations, and we found that they seem to be clean of the kinds of sponsorships that we call AstroTurf here, which are, you know, sponsored by oil companies and so on. The names of the staff and the directors for this group were all female, and Lynn Cheney is listed as one of the directors emeriti of this group. And so I just thought you might want to know that we're kind of keeping touch of
Texas. Glad, yeah, because I'm sure Texas is...
Yeah, the legislature is about to come back in, and you know, no one's safe.
The reason it's all women is that it's an outgrowth of the Independent Women's Forum or Foundation, something like that. And I don't know that one. I'd have to look into it. But it's kind of cranking up.
Mm-hmm.
So, Susan, this is Frank.
Hi, Frank.
How are you doing?
Good.
From a tactics perspective, what do you guys see as, and I guess this is for anyone, what do you see as the most appropriate or effective response here?
Well, I think what's appropriate is to have something ready to roll when something like this shows up in your area so that you can find, it's okay for me, here's another area where we each have to ask our questions about advocacy and whatnot. I okayed it with my supervisor to get involved in this as part of my job, and it is perfectly appropriate for me as a climate educator to provide expertise and information and help connect people in this area. So I think probably what would be useful, and other people chime in, is if, for example, I put together a list of resources and thoughts on some of these that were ready to go for threats that come up locally.
Would it be, could this be something that we then make available through the Climate Literacy Network website?
I think that's probably appropriate. I think we need to, I would put it on our website, but also sure through the Climate Literacy Network.
Yeah.
Appropriate. I think we need to be aware of what's happening in our backyards and be prepared to empower local people with the thinking of professionals, which is what we are.
So Susan, just to take this a little further, I mean, I'm assuming the evolution community have evolved in a time-tested approach here.
And yes.
This is,
and
the same thing, right?
Yes, yeah.
And so what did they find was effective in, you know, supporting the science and teaching of science?
I think that's a good question. We have been in contact with Steve Newton, who's, you may recall, was one of our invited speakers at one of our climate literacy sessions, talking about threats to earth science from the same community, from National Center for Science Education.
Right.
I think there's probably a variety of approaches depending on the level of the decision making. He said that for things like this, school board campaigns, that a locally based letter writing campaign was good. And I would have to explore more on their website and talk with Steve more to find out what he thought. Basically, they have a section of their website called something like promoting the integrity of science education or something like that. And
the Balanced Education Group.
At the National Center for Science Education,
okay.
Which was, of course, the kind of vanguard of you know, scientific integrity when it came to the evolution education questions. So I'd have to look more and see what resources they have and probably just get some feedback from Steve.
Susan, is that Eugenia's group out in California?
Yeah.
Okay. All that I can add, Frank, is Roger Bybee, who you may or may not know, has been the head of biological sciences curriculum study here in Colorado and head of a lot of national projects. His bottom line on evolution is don't get on a radio talk show for a debate.
Yeah.
He said you can never win those kinds of things.
Right.
And in fighting the evolution stuff, they always made a point to get religious scientists and science educators who could clearly say, you know, I'm a religious person. My father was a pastor. Blah 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 blah. But, and be able to make that distinction. That's not so directly applicable. But the other two things that I want to add that Susan has touched on that I think are crucial is the linkage to state standards, because every school board worth its salt says, but it says in the state standards. And so that's why the kind of fights that, for instance, Chris has been waging in Texas with state standards and many other people have, are so important. And why Susan's tactic of educating the scientists about the state standards is so crucial for the voice at the school board level. And the other thing is being able to talk about local disturbances from climate change and that it's not about polar bears, but it's about, you know, our water sources here in the mountains of Colorado or whatever the local implications are.
So, I mean, but tracking all the standards is a heroic and humongous task.
Oh, yes. And it has to be done, just like Susan was implying, at the state level.
So this is why it's good we have a national network here. I mean, I am never going to know about, you know, very much about other state standards except for the ones I'm directly involved in. So it's important that we all have each other who knows about our own standards.
But, I mean, I don't have any confidence that we have somebody watching all the standards. I mean, you know.
Well, I don't think we do have any one person or any one group watching all of the standards, but
right.
I think what Susan's point is that through this kind of conversation, we each sort of have to take that responsibility for our own regions.
Right. I guess what I'm looking at is a map of you know, where I mean, it's possible to have a web-based map that where we kind of give updates on the status of standards on the climate literacy website and you know, any, like, if Chris wants to update us on the standards and how it changes, it's almost like a little blog of the, because it's not a lot of words of there's key words that are changing in these things, and you know, and you know, a color that designates how long has it been since somebody's done anything for the standard in Alaska?
Yeah,
I've never heard anybody talk
another
about
thing that's really worrying me, Frank, is something that you brought up in the website on the movie that has come out that they're sending to schools with letters and lesson plans, and teachers get this and they think this is real science unless someone is out there to tell them. So I put out an email to the science supervisors group to let them at least be aware that these are being sent out to their teachers, and to let their teachers know that, you know, to be very skeptical of this group because they are a non-science group.
Right.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've been looking at the curriculum from that movie, No Evil, Not Evil, Just
Yes.
Wrong, The True Cost of Global Warming Hysteria, and they've got a bunch of PhDs listed very impressively. Patrick Michaels, who's a kind of a renowned troublemaker, and a number of other folks. But the curriculum is really lame, but it looks good. And they talk about how they've correlated it to the National Science Education Standards that were developed by the National Science Foundation, which, you know, of course, they weren't developed by the National Science Foundation.
Right.
But it just gives you a sense of how they're trying to make themselves look really professional. And I think somebody, maybe in the Clean Project, should go through the lesson materials. There's basically three modules in the curriculum, one on global warming, one on malaria, and one on renewable energy and how terrible it is. So we need to go through...
Where is this curriculum, Mark?
It's linked from the Balanced Education website. It's called Not Evil, Just Wrong. And
okay.
If you do a Google search on it, it's actually noteviljustwrong.com is one word.
Mark, we're trying to find out who funded this, and because this takes a lot of money, and who is funding the mail-outs to the schools, to the teachers.
Well, the interesting thing about it, Chris, is that the business model that they're using is, I mean, it's better than a lot of the ones I've seen on other products.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you have to pay a certain much, and you get a bundle of this and classroom sets, and, you know, it's somebody put some time into this.
Yes, indeed.
Wow.
There's a Greener Horizon Films LTD that made the DVD, but who developed the curriculum? Well, I mean, it tells you who in the first couple pages of the curriculum. So, anyhow, yeah, I don't know.
Is there a way to send a letter to this group letting them know that the Climate Literacy Network is aware of their, you know, information packet and has the following bullet points to negate some of the science?
I think we have to think
that
through. I mean, it's a bit like the advice about not getting on a radio debate because often the other guy ends up looking, you know, it gives them more respect or really do.
I don't think that they would listen to us. This is Susan. But I think there's some merit to being aware. I think it would be, for example, for this Mesa County thing, if I came in and said, I'm part of a national network and we think that, you know, you guys even considering this is just completely misguided and wrongheaded, I think maybe we're more strategic if we work more through our back channels.
I totally agree. The localness is really important.
I'm not saying we don't communicate as a network, but to get involved in controversies, I think we're better off promoting our localness, our connections to that.
Yeah, I agree, especially with the balanced education, but in terms of the curriculum, it's good to have like a one-pager that shows all the flaws, which are many, in what they're doing, because...
Well, I think that's something that if we could put something like that together and make it available through the Climate Literacy Network site, that then anybody who is involved in a local effort can use as ammunition.
Yes.
That would... seems to me to be maybe a better avenue, so that we make use of what we collectively can put together, but then use it in a local way.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes. And the other thing that Frank said that makes sense to me is having some information about state standards that have been updated and the kinds of things that have been written into state standards that has been accepted at the state level that we think is a good way to go, so that other people who are starting a state standards revision have a place to go to see what other states have done that's been successful.
Well,
I think that's part of what you were suggesting, Frank. Is that right?
This is Doug. Listening to this, I'm coming up with a productively devious idea for a new self-alternate fellows program where we get some people to go and find these people and actually show them something important and interesting to do that'll take them away from these campaigns.
You are dangerous.
Who's with me?
That's my pitchfork.
Since this is being recorded, we'll have to talk offline about that, I guess.
Good thing I was using my alias during the call.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for starting that discussion, Susan. I think that there's a number of avenues where we can make resources available through the Climate Literacy Network and our own efforts to help individuals in local regions. I think that's really the way we should think about going.
Mm-hmm. And helping people connect each other too when it.
Yeah.
No, I've asked them to keep me posted on this one. Let me know if this comes up again and we can help them connect with like-minded folks and whatnot. But, I think mm-hmm. there's other ones that are more dangerous.
But, I mean, another piece of all this, sorry, I just had to step off for a second, that I did want to bring up relative to this point, is, I mean, one of the elements of climate literacy is in the definition. And that is to... know how to assess scientifically credible information about climate, and educators are supposed to be able to do that as well as students and citizens. And so I think it's important that we figure out how to support people to be able to do that work more skillfully. Sorry if that just came in completely orthogonal to our conversation.
No, that's important. Yeah.
It's within the scope of our work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if an educator is seeing this curriculum and they're looking at it and going, I mean, the in the curriculum, the first lesson They're looking at a data plot from the first IPCC assessment and showing why the medieval warm period is just as warm as the current warming. But that was circa, you know, I don't know what year they ended, but
1995 was the first one.
Right, 90. But, you know, when did the data plot end? It's going to be before that, right? Because it's 2 years before the assessment.
Right,
so
yeah.
It's going to be, you know, it's going to be somewhere in the late 80s to maybe early 90s that data plot goes. And, you know, well, we all know where the warming happened after that. And so, but that's their way of saying, well, there's been no warming. I'm going to have to look more carefully, but you know, when I saw it and I saw what the reference point was, I'm like, well, I mean, of course, this is a dynamic field. Why are you, anybody who knows this stuff should know that, but that's the problem. So anyway, I mean, what I'm trying to say is that this is well within the scope of our work. This is not not a separate part of our work.
No, I agree, and I was very pleased that my supervisor saw it that way, too. Because I didn't really want to have to do it entirely as a private citizen, but...
Right.
Okay, are there any other comments or other topics?
I have something that's... totally different if we're ready to ship.
Say who?
Karen.
This is Karen?
Okay. Yeah. And it has to do with the No Child Left Inside legislation at the federal level, which is the legislation that would provide states with money to implement environmental literacy plans at the state level. And it's what has driven here in Colorado, what has driven our state environmental education affiliate in advancing all sorts of work, including revisions of the standards at the state level. In any case, the federal legislation, there's been a big push in the last month to get additional sponsors in the House for the bill, and they're up to 119 or 20 co-sponsors in the House. And this bill was supposed to be considered for inclusion in the whole Elementary and Secondary Education Act in the Senate committee in the month of May. I'm not sure where that has ended. My guess is it's behind schedule. But I'm going to be back in D.C. this coming week. And what I wanted to ask is whether there's interest in knowing about the inclusion of this in the Elementary and Secondary Education Act reauthorization, and I should plan to do a little brief update for everybody over the next week or two or not.
No, I think that would be really helpful, especially if there's things that the Climate Literacy Network can, you know, people can think about doing to help move things forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
So just email me, and when you're ready to talk about this in the session, just email me and Marion, and we'll find a date that works.
Okay. And I don't expect it to be a lengthy item, but
yeah, no, that's okay.
Yep. Okay.
And are there any other issues? We'll see if we can follow up on trying to make a space on the website so that we can sort of try to capture these materials and provide a place where people can find them and provide them to local groups as needed.
Yep.
Okay, well, if there is nothing else, we will plan to talk again next week.
One question for everyone. Did everybody survive the CCEP process?
Yes, more or less. Just so far behind it, everything else.
Right. Well, it's done now, right?
Well,
it's out of our hands.
It's out of our hands.
I'm wondering, yes, it's out of our... Go ahead, Susan.
I said, I'm wondering who's going to review them since we all wrote them.
Yeah, I know. I've been thinking about that a lot.
I think what I've heard somewhere along the line is they're going to have lots of panels. So that
but what does that mean? They still have to find people to sit on them.
Yeah, lots of people to...
Yeah, I think if the conflict of interest is, as long as nothing on their panel is what they're... I mean, you've been through this many, many more times than I have, but...
Yeah, well, it varies a lot. It varies a lot. Sometimes they get so frustrated that, like you said, it's all right if somebody from Turk submitted a proposal as long as I wasn't on it, and that's one level. that's still, you know, by what I would consider the gold standard, that's still a conflict, but... if they don't have enough reviewers, which, I mean, we're so intertwined that it seems to be difficult. I wonder, does anybody have any idea how many proposals were actually received? I know there was 175 letters of intent. Jill Karsten told me that.
Right. Yeah, but, I mean, you know, how many people actually submitted the full...
Well, that was the question. But she said that there were 175 letters of intent, and they were expecting 50, so...
Oh, my God.
I'm surprised they were expecting 50. But
yeah, that's
anyway.
What I was surprised
to say. Well, I mean, but it was short, and there were a lot of people who were going after these things.
Right.
It was hard to go after. It was not an easy thing to do.
Yeah. That I can attest to. I'm sure Susan and some other people on the phone can also.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, that's
okay.
That's cool.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Tamara.
Thank you,
everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.